CliffCentral.com.
Give me a level there.
1, 2. Yes. Now I can hear myself.
My buddy, give me a level there.
3, 4, 5.
Look how smart you look today, by the way.
Ben, give me a level.
Oh, no.
No.
Yes, there we go. There.
Thank goodness. Oh, there it is. Thank goodness. Yes, it is. Good morning, everybody. Oh, it's Friday. Can you believe this?
Yes, about time.
Well, 2 weeks back on the job. It's almost the end of January. We've got like a week and a half of January left. So, yeah, storming along into 2017 without even a moment to catch your breath. How's it going so far? How are you doing with this 2017?
It's like 2016 with a better smell at the moment.
Better smell?
Yeah.
Better smell?
You know if something's marginally better, it's like something's better. Like a little thing.
Okay.
All right.
If you say better smell, I'll take your word for it. I was recording an interview yesterday. There's a funny smell.
Speaking of smells.
No. Poor Sia went and lit a candle in this pod studio of ours. We've got a little, what we call the Cliff Central pod. It's a little room where you've got three chairs and a table and a computer, and you've got microphones and you can record. It's sort of in our intimate little studio, right?
Uh-huh.
And I recorded an interview there with Professor Cheryl Delaray, who is the Vice Chancellor and Rector of the University of Pretoria yesterday. She popped in and we spoke to her for about an hour. But the pod, something happened there, what was it, September last year?
Oh, right, when we thought a rat got stuck in the roof.
Yeah, we thought something had got in there and was dead.
Ooh.
And I still can't. We pulled out the floor. We pulled out the ceiling. We have checked in every possible place, and we cannot find it, but there's still a smell like something's dead. You know there's a dead smell?
Oh.
It could just be like the misery from the toilet is coming up from a vent. You know, like apparently like ghosts let off a smell. Like if you got ghosts, there's this horrible smell that wafts through.
Really?
Like evil spirits. Maybe it's just the sadness of the men's gents is going through to that booth.
No, I don't think so.
Check the vent system in this place. It could be that.
It's the women's bathroom that's on the other side.
Yeah, but the men's bathroom could be going through that.
So
there's a lot of sadness in there, Gareth. A lot of sadness, a lot of anger.
Anger.
There used to be an exorcism in that place. We just wouldn't be able to find a brave enough priest to go in that toilet.
Oh, boy.
Can you imagine? We say, look, it's like the exorcism. We've seen the movie. So, yeah, okay, well, it's kind of like that.
Do you think we actually need to exorcise that room?
Well, I mean, Ben, you're making it sound as if it has defaulted to its horrible self. After we were talking earlier this week about how it's not smelling as bad. So has it gone back?
Well, look, you know when you open a door and every door has a certain sound when you open it because on those like delayed levers and it creaks a bit?
Yeah.
There's a certain sound of sorrow that comes out of that creak, which is different. Seriously, go test the woman's bathroom and it opens up and goes, Men's bathroom goes, And then you walk in and there's like this atmosphere of just... Like, I went there to wash my hands there yesterday, okay? Because, like, I toilet at the gym. That's what I do. That's pretty much why I go there.
Huh.
And I just went to wash my hands, and it felt like I just walked into someone's misery.
Do you, you go to the gym across the road?
Yeah.
Okay, that's convenient.
Pretty much.
But if you really need to pee, you go all that way?
No, if I'm really, really busting.
Yeah, then you
I
go
have
there.
To go here.
Wait, so just to pee, you go across the road?
No, what I do, seriously, like, because I'm an adult, I can generally manage these things. And then I do gym at the same time.
I heard that's really, really bad to hold in anything.
Yeah, it is. But I'm not holding it in. I was like, okay, cool. I need to go to the toilet, so that my gym session is quite soon. It's also now, it's like an alarm clock.
Okay, each his own.
Yeah, I think you've got to develop like a pattern. It shouldn't be a surprise. Oh my God, my bladder's full.
Yeah.
But there are those occasions. You don't really schedule these things. Like
I've never had a surprise pee. I don't know.
You haven't had one of those?
You get those?
Oh my goodness. I swear sometimes I have like a 75-year-old man's bladder.
Clearly.
I'm just sitting around, and then like 3 seconds if I do not pee.
You weigh like 40 kilograms.
I'm just trying to figure out, not.
Like your bladder must be the size of a tennis ball. Surely you can, you could have the fullest bladder out of all of us. You wouldn't even know.
Come on, we all have those. Okay, evidently I'm the only one.
So you get a
this
surprise.
Is awkward.
You suddenly, because I know I can go through the night. I mean, most of us can, right?
Yeah.
You go to sleep at like 10 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock at night. You wake up in the morning at, what time do we wake up? 4:45.
Yeah.
And then you pee.
So, yeah, this
How
is
many hours is that?
This is one of the few things about getting old that's decent. There's very little surprises in your life.
Well, except that.
I mean, you're like starting a meeting, okay, right? I'd be looking forward to getting everyone around this table. Oh, wait, hang on a second. I really have to pee.
Yeah. Let's get out of here, everybody.
Sorry, it snuck up on me. I'm sorry.
Yes, and that does happen sometimes.
Let's just reschedule this conference call for next week.
Yeah, right.
1-3 minutes. That's all.
Listen, Trump is being inaugurated today, so it's an appropriately lavatorial discussion. I see some people are in complete meltdown over this, though. It's the strangest thing. Like, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican or anything else, I can't understand how this inauguration of Donald Trump is such a major thing to people who didn't support him, who didn't vote for him. And even people who didn't have a vote. Like I see Ranjini Moonsamy is like, she put up a picture of the Lincoln Memorial and said, I was at this Lincoln Memorial, it was breathtaking, and now Trump is about to turn it into a carnival circus. Like, that's a little extreme.
Is he really?
A carnival circus? All I saw was pictures of him and his family standing in front of it, and all of them dressed very appropriately.
I don't know if it'd be a carnival circus. If anything, you would turn it into like a quinceañera. What do they do in Mexico?
No, he's going to turn it into a casino. <That's> I'm going to make it a great. I'm going to make Lincoln's statue great again.
Well, already people are now saying he's the most unpopular president-elect in modern history because they are like opening parties and events before the inauguration, and there's literally like no one there at any of the concerts, at any of the welcome stages. There's just no one. People are tweeting that. And once again, just trying to pull Trump down before he's even proven himself, really.
There's just a lot of people who are, they're very emotional about this. Unnecessarily emotional. Like, there's another president. Every 4 years in America, they vote for a president. I don't know why this is surprising and different to people, just like whether you're surprised by a pee or not. You should know that your clock should go, oh, 4 years, it's time for a new one.
It's almost like the glamour of victimhood nowadays. It's like, oh, I can't believe this. Another thing I've got to worry about is this president. Oh, shame, poor me.
There is a bit of that.
But maybe Americans just need to work their way to the point where we are in South Africa. After 8 years with our president, we have conditioned and trained ourselves to not be as invested in politicians. In fact, you know, some of us hate all politicians because
which is a good thing.
We realize that that's the safest thing to do. So, you know, maybe Americans still need to get to that point.
That's a sensible point of view. I like that. That's very, very thoughtful.
But like a lot of these people would still be shocked at the fact that a priest can be a pedophile. It's like people have got to stop being so naive towards the world.
But question, just because Obama has spent 2 terms as president, so he can't be president anymore. He can't go for election again.
No.
But that doesn't mean he can't run for another political position, does it?
Yeah, but what do you do after you've been president? Any other political position is going to look like a step down.
Well, maybe it's like a passion project of his, and so he wants to become, you know, mayor of Chicago.
Trust me, a passion project of his is now his handicap. He's going to be playing a lot more golf.
I'm trying to ignite a little hope here.
Yeah, well,
but the
people in Chicago.
Yeah, shame. Chicago's a disaster. I mean, they've got They've got the worst rates of crime in America. It's just a very messy place at the moment. You know who the mayor is there?
Who?
It's his former chief of staff.
Buddy Love?
Rahm Emanuel.
Oh, no.
Mm. Oh, listen, they've come up with the new failed states index for 2017. Do you want 2016. Do you want to hear it?
Wait, sorry. I just called him Buddy Love. That's the Eddie Murphy character.
Buddy Love.
What is Obama's, was a personal assistant, something Love, though?
Yeah, Reggie Love.
Reggie Love.
Buddy Love. Buddy Love. All right.
Buddy Love.
A lot of people commenting just before we get to the failed states index. A lot of people talking about John Robbie yesterday. I thought he was pretty interesting. He told some amazing stories. That story about Eugene de Kock and how he started laughing. And then John said, what are you laughing at? And he said, well, you were on a list. Yeah. It's quite something, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
But Eugene de Kock's response as to why he didn't follow through was very intriguing.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems almost as if the guy was a fan of freedom of speech.
Yeah.
Who would have expected that?
In most bigoted times, he was still...
Yeah, there was a freedom of speech fan back then. All right, so here, the Fund for Peace is this non-profit organization. It's a worldwide NPO. What they do is they, based on a bunch of different categories and I suppose... What would you call them? Factors in every country. They figure out which countries are most in danger and which countries they consider to be free and open societies and which countries they consider to be very dangerous and closed societies. It has to do with everything from population dynamics to infrastructure to the economy of those countries to the legal and human rights issues in those countries, whether it's a security state or not. How much individual freedom of movement people in the countries have, freedom of expression too, all of this stuff comes into it. So they compile a list every year of which countries are most in danger, which ones they consider not to be the sort of places you want to spend too much time in, and which countries are right at the bottom of the list. Those are the ones you want to be in. Those are the sustainable countries. That's not a compliment, by the way, just being sustainable, but that's the highest compliment that the Fund for Peace pay for anybody. So no guesses as to who's at the top, right? Country number 178, very sustainable. Anybody want to guess?
Oh, it's one of the desert countries, isn't it?
No, very sustainable. This is
very sustainable.
No. Oh. Sweden.
Ben says Sweden. Mavs?
I'm going to guess something like Canada.
All right.
Sustainable.
So they can kind of do their own thing.
These are the countries with a great human rights record, free movement. They don't get involved in people's personal liberties that much. There's freedom of the press. There's a good human rights record. There's a good economy, welfare.
Something in Europe.
Yeah, you'd be right.
Switzerland.
No, Ben was the closest. Finland is now the top of the list. It used to always be Norway. Norway's moved to second place. They must be devastated.
Yeah.
Then New Zealand, Denmark, Switzerland, Australia, Ireland, then only Sweden, Ben. So they've also dropped a couple of points. But how's that? New Zealand and Australia are the only countries outside of Europe in the top 10. And then Canada comes in as the first country outside of Europe and Australasia.
I'd love to know if there's an index of the most boring countries in the world, how many of those countries then feature in it?
I would imagine quite a few. Certainly Canada's boring. But
what's
then,
the criteria?
Yeah.
Define boring.
Nothing ever happens.
Yeah, exactly.
Most exciting thing is woman's cat gets stuck in tree. Entire military summoned to help. You know, and then at the very bottom of the list, anyone want to guess what country is the worst country in the world according to the Fund for Peace?
Sudan.
Syria.
Yeah. Syria's there. I've got the top 10 for you. Do you want to do a quick countdown, Casey Kasem style?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's all do this. We need to do a proper countdown so that we can get into this in a big way. All right. Everybody, are you ready? It's time for the, hi, I'm Casey Kasem, and you're just in time for the worst countries in the world countdown. Let's go. At number 10, with a terrible record of just about everything, including horrible tornadoes and storms, it's Haiti. That's right. Haiti, where no one wants to live, even though it's the Caribbean tropical paradise, that its next-door neighbor, the Dominican Republic, seems to get right. Haiti gets everything the Dominican Republic gets wrong. They are on the same island, right? Hispaniola. And the one side is run by the Haitians, and the other side's run by the Dominicans. Dominican Republic is a paradise. Just because it's run by good leaders. Haiti is a clusterfuck. And they're on the same island. They've got the same everything. Except the one side elects bad governments, the other side good. Afghanistan coming in at number 9. That's good for them. They used to be right down at the bottom, so they've improved a little bit, Afghanistan. Isn't that nice? Let's give them a round of applause.
Yay.
That's great for Afghanistan. Not a lot of hope there, but this is their big moment to shine. This is like them, this is like them getting into a tournament of ugliness, but just barely qualifying. Well done to them. In the top 8, Democratic Republic of Congo is at number 8. Chad is at number 7. Syria, Mubs, is at number 6. Mm. So despite all-out war, despite hideous, hideous circumstances for anyone, despite cities like Aleppo losing, I think it's 60 to 80% of their total population, they've only got to number 4.
Number 6.
5, 6.
Imagine sitting there in Syria and you're having a conversation with your friend and you go, you know what? There's 5 worst countries in the...
Yeah, you're sitting in a burnt out, bummed out rubble pile and you both look at each other and go, you know, Ahmed, we mustn't complain. Things could be worse. There are 5 countries in the world that are worse than we are. Joint number 4 is Yemen and the Sudan. So there's Ben's guess at number 4. Number 3, the Central African Republic. Number 2, South Sudan, the youngest country in the world. Mm. Who are also in that position because Sudan makes it that much worse for them. Because they are entirely landlocked and very dependent on Sudan. So despite getting their independence from Sudan, they're still their bitch, effectively. And then Somalia at the top of the list, the number 1 worst country to live in, Somalia. So what we should be worried about here is 6 of the top 10 crap countries in the world are all on our continent. And we've got to figure out why and do something about that.
Sure, Somalia, huh? I guess it's all those pirates.
Zimbabwe is at number 16 on the list. Remember, the lower you are, the worse off your country is. And I'm trying to find us, and I hope we're higher up than anybody else here.
I'm guessing 38.
Ah, we're at number 108. Ah. Very nicely done. 108. We're right between Mexico, who's worse than us, and Armenia, who's better than us.
Oh, the Kardashian homeland.
That's right. There are European countries who are much worse than us, like Serbia,
Moldova,
and Bosnia. But otherwise, we're not in bad company. We're hanging around with people like Samoa, Macedonia, Suriname, Kazakhstan, Cuba, Belize, and Brazil. Jamaica's also right there.
I have never heard of Brazil.
Brazil.
There we go. Let's end the week. That's it. We're done. I was like, oh, that's quite an exotic country. Where's that?
Sorry.
Brazil.
Yeah. Brazil. America comes in at 159 out of 178. So they're okay, but they're nowhere near the top 10. And the United Kingdom is three spots higher than them at 162. Portugal does better than the UK and the US.
And what about North Korea?
Yes, where is
Kim? I don't even know if there's a way to measure North Korea, but let's have a look if they're on the list. And by the way, Portugal did something interesting. They were very brave and decided to completely legalize all drugs. And I think it's had a major effect on them in a positive sense.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very mature.
Oh, here's North Korea, number 30. Not too bad. I mean, considering you have to eat your children there to sustain yourself. They're doing better than Kenya, North Korea. They're doing better than Liberia, Myanmar, Libya, Cameroon, Cote d'Ivoire, and Ethiopia. So well done to them. It's always nice to rank these countries because then you know how shitty or how good your own country is. So let's give a round of applause to all the countries who came in above 50, because those people are not going to be dead tomorrow.
Wow.
Very nicely done. All right. So I've been trying to get into a new show, and I'm sort of a little bit embarrassed to admit it, but I'm going to tell you anyway.
Scream Queens.
No. No, I've started watching a cartoon show called Star Wars Rebels.
It's one of the best shows right now.
It's animated shows, yeah. And it's for kids, I suppose. I mean, it's probably for adults as well.
It really isn't, huh? It's,
yeah.
Did you so read up about the show? It's like, wow, the show's so great, but it's not for kids.
I love it. I am massively, massively into this show.
Animation is the way to go.
It really is. You don't have to pay for actors. You just get voiceover artists.
And some of those artists can do several characters.
Correct. You've got the animation is so much cheaper than it's ever been. You used to have to draw every single thing.
Yeah.
These days, computers do all of it for you. So you need artists in the beginning, but you know, after that, it becomes incredibly easy to do. And you've got a great script in the form of Star Wars. You just have to fill in a couple of gaps here and there, and you've got a couple of people who write good stories, and hey presto, you've got a winning show.
That's the great thing about that, because there are gaps in Star Wars. They can only make so many movies, right? Mm. So the animated series can really just sort of fill in everything. It's a dot joiner of note.
I got to say again that the best movie of last year was Rogue One, without a doubt. And it's probably the best Star Wars movie I've seen since the original trilogy.
It looks very Japanese.
Yes, it's good. What, Star Wars Rebels?
Yeah.
So good.
And so,
what's wrong with that, Sia?
I'm not being...
Is your atrophobia coming back again?
Oh, like characters like Ahsoka.
Ahsoka Tano.
See?
Yeah.
Just throwing
See,
it out
I'm
there.
I'm such a fan. I know exactly who you're talking about.
So George Lucas is, of course, getting a cut of this.
No, because remember, he sold it to Disney.
Oh, man.
He sold Lucasfilm and Star Wars, the whole franchise, to Disney. So Disney are the ones who are mining this thing for all it's worth now. But
he
going to
own a thing did of you it go, anymore?
Listen, you have young nephews, nieces, cousins.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you went into a toy store around Christmas time, what did you see?
Ridiculous.
Star Wars. Uh-huh. Everywhere, right?
Yeah, everywhere.
Disney are taking this to the next level. They are going to make so much money. I think Lucas sold it cheap at a couple of billion.
Well, that's the thing about Disney, because of distribution networks and their history in entertainment,
yes,
they can get something like that and retake the next financial level.
That's quite incredible, right? All right, I've got a bunch of things that I want to tell you later on. Amazing facts about the human body that were sent to me by Kala, who listens to us every day. And thank you, Kala. This is really fascinating. I'll give you one just to whet your appetite. The only part of the body that has no blood supply, can you guess what it is? It gets its oxygen, but it doesn't need blood.
Sure.
The cornea of the eye. Oh. It receives oxygen directly from the air.
From the air?
Yeah. Takes the oxygen it needs straight from the air. Isn't that interesting? Every other part of your body needs a blood supply. All right, a bunch of other really interesting things. We'll get to that shortly. We've got news. We've got sport. We've got Anthea. We're also going to check in with Brooks Spector, who is one of the people we like to talk to when it comes to American politics, find out what he thinks of the Trump inauguration and the imminent Trump presidency.
And that's one of the best villain names of all time.
Brooks Spector.
Yeah. Let's ask him how he's taking over the world this weekend, too.
Okay. All right, so all of that's coming up. Let's go to Mabali without any further delay. She's got the news headlines. They are brought to you by Colcacchio Pizzeria, who make the finest. I mean, obviously, they're a pizzeria, so they make the best pizzas, but they make pastas and salads and all kinds of amazing meals. In fact, just talking about it now makes me want to order some. I think that's what I'm going to have for supper tonight. I'm going to have one of their amazing salads. They've got everything in them. And if you haven't tried them out, you need to get their rewards app. You need to go and check out their latest and greatest branches. And they're all over the country, so there's no excuse anymore. They used to only be in Cape Town. And when I went down there, I would go to them every time. Now, they're up the road. So everybody can have terrific Italian and artisanal food, the way that only Colcacchio makes it. Let's get into the news. Mubs, what do we have this morning that we need to know about?
Well, the acting National Police Commissioner, Kgomotso Phahlane, a little bit annoyed over the last couple of days and has described the manner in which the Independent Police Investigative Directorate, or IPID, is investigating him as an assault on his character and integrity.
Didn't they raid his house yesterday or something?
Yes, they did. IPID investigators conducted a search of the Lieutenant General's luxury house in the Pretoria North area. This is part of a corruption investigation because Phahlane is accused of, amongst other things, taking kickbacks to secure tenders for a company during his tenure as head of the police's forensics division. It's alleged that a company had installed an 80,000 rand sound system in Phahlane's home in return for tenders. Phahlane is said to be disgusted and disappointed with the level of disrespect shown by everyone involved in the search of his property, and this, of course, includes the media.
Oh, you'll get over it. Disrespect you can get over. If you've got a sound system worth a couple of hundred grand in there, and you've got amazing luxury houses and that kind of thing, and you're a policeman, You've got some splaining to do.
Now, he did confirm having met with IPID investigators yesterday and says that he will continue to cooperate with them. So, yeah, you know, heading into the weekend with maybe just a little bit of stress.
Listen to this. I was talking to someone the other day about they were trying to get a song played on a TV channel, a music TV channel here in South Africa.
Uh-huh.
So they go in, they see the guy. Guy says to them, oh, I'm so sorry I haven't replied to your emails and I haven't seen you up to now, but I'm so busy building a house. Hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So the guy goes, what do you mean? So he says, well, you know, it's expensive building a house.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The guy was hinting at he needed a kickback. This country's full of really slimy people, you know? Can you imagine that's a TV channel?
Oh, yeah. TV, radio, it's pretty much standard practice to do like a brown envelope situation.
They call it payola, and it still happens at some radio stations.
Yeah.
Do you know, this guy mustn't get upset, this Lieutenant General Phahlane, because if he is living, remember what most police men and women get?
I have no idea.
It's very little money. They don't have great salaries. They're expected to do difficult work. I feel bad for the police, but this guy, if he's living a life of luxury, if he's living like a cabinet minister or like a CEO, that shouldn't be happening. Not because I want police people to not earn, but if you're at the top and the difference between you and the ordinary officer is so huge, then there's something wrong. This is a public service. This is not a job where you've come up with your own idea and you've put it into action, you've made money. You're not George Lucas. You're a policeman. You're paid by us. No one in the state should earn over a certain amount of money, which is why you go into the state. You're a servant. You're a public servant. So let's go and check his house out. Let's see what he's got. And if he's got too much stuff and he's too wealthy and he's living in too much of the lap of luxury, then you know something dodgy's going on. All right.
Owners of other models of the Ford Kuga, the story just refuses to go away, say their vehicles have also caught fire.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, no.
They're now challenging the vehicle manufacturer's claims that only one version of the car has a fault that could result in it bursting into flames. The National Consumer Commission yesterday did confirm that they have received complaints from owners of the Ford Kuga 2.5-litre turbo and the Ford Kuga 1.5-litre EcoBoost. Remember, Ford had told us that only one model was affected, and that was the 1.6-litre.
Right.
Yeah, Ford, get your house together. I mean, I don't know what else to say.
That was the one thing they had going for themselves. Like, guys, everyone, don't panic. It's just the one model.
Yeah, but turns out that more and more people are coming forward and saying, well, my model is not that 1.6 liter, but it also just suddenly burst into flames.
Let's go to Skype. There's someone on the line for us. Hey, good morning.
Hi, Gareth.
What's up? Who is this, by the way?
It's Kevin. How are you doing?
Hey, Kevin. Nice to hear from you, man.
I wanted to ask you a question. I think I'm falling in the tail end of falling in the wrong time, but I'm catching up on the other podcast, and I thought, let me just call in. I wanted to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
If you think being successful and being in a relationship can work at the same time, like if if being successful or being a relationship can actually last being successful in the beginning phases of the relationship.
Let's do a little round table here. Mabs, you start off. What do you think? Can you be very successful and have a successful relationship at the same time?
No.
No. Mabali says no. That's one vote for no, Kevin. Sia, what do you think?
I think it's about what you define as successful.
Oh, come
I know
on,
it
Sia.
Seems kind of philosophical,
don't
but it's
dodge
true.
The question.
No, but like Sia's right, because if your relationship is literally just don't talk to each other until Friday, then you bang, then great. But it's a very difficult question, this. Because it's like your level of success. Some people are happy with owning X, and then their whole life is a relationship, and they're deemed a success.
All right.
Sorry, Kevin. I mean, I wish I could be as cutthroat as Mabali here.
I like that we agree these
Well, things. I mean, I'm just trying to think of who we consider to be some of the most successful people in the world and whether they've maintained
lasting
relationships.
I've got a partnership that has worked, and that's the most stressful job on earth, and the two of them kept it together, and there's no scandal, there's no hint of any kind of trouble in their relationship. Barack and Michelle Obama, you can do both.
That's actually a good example.
What Evs? Madiba's funeral, and he was smacking on that Danish woman, and Michelle was like, I will cut you, bitch. I will cut you.
I remember that, but come on. These two, they've made it work. So, you know, even if behind closed doors they argue, who doesn't?
But at the same time, the expectations are very different. It's like, okay, Barack, you're president. I'm the first lady. This is how it is.
Yeah.
It's a very personal thing.
But Kevin, did I hear you correctly when you spoke about the beginning of a relationship?
Yeah, because what I mean, I've been doing a lot of reading on Elon Musk. And at the start of a relationship, before he was this big billionaire, he married for love, and that marriage didn't last. He had kids with the wife, so obviously they banged and they had the chance to time together and stuff like that, but they had kids. That didn't last.
Yeah.
After that, he married some model, and obviously she married him for the money because he got a hell of a payout from PayPal, and then that didn't last. So if a marriage can't last for love and can't last for money, like when, like, and obviously he's spending 90% of his time with three companies.
I think it's down to the person. I think if two people decide that there's a lot of elasticity in the relationship, there's a lot of give and take, and there's a lot of understanding, then it'll weather any storm. If the two people are not elastic, in other words, if you're very set in your ways and you have certain demands and expectations and I have certain demands and expectations, we're going to butt heads all the time. It's never going to work.
Yeah.
You just spend all your time fighting. But I think to be successful, part of being successful is to be emotionally stable. You could have all the money in the world in the bank. Now, I've heard Elon Musk is a very difficult guy.
Yeah, no, same. From the interviews and stuff, he's a very blunt person. He doesn't show any emotion, or he's funny at times, but he doesn't show any other emotion.
Yeah, I think he must be a complicated guy to live with. So, you know, for all we know, there are lots of people like that. There are lots of men in the world and lots of women in the world who are difficult to get along with.
But also, quite simply, you're good at something if you put a lot of time and effort into it, right? If you don't have anything else in your life, then you're going to be great. I mean, like if I had looked back on my life now, if I was 14, I kept playing golf, and I never, ever cared for any other person other than me, I could probably be a pro golfer right now, a good one. But I, you know, there's more to life. So Elon Musk, he's obviously really rich. He's like, you know what? I don't need to be nice to anyone. So therefore, I'm successful now.
Yeah, it's a good question though, Kevin. What's your story? Are you in a relationship?
Are you being held back?
No, I'm not being held back. I'm just starting out now, and I'm actually at the point where I'm doing my 9-to-5 job, and I'm actually starting my own company. And I found that the time that I usually had to spend with my partner is the time that I need to invest now in doing something for my company, having to work late, having to be at places leaving work at 5 and then leaving to go and do something else for my, and then that minute that all of a sudden all that time that you have to spend on the company now instead of on that person that you have to kind of go out of your way to make time for that person. And if you don't have someone, like you said, that's willing to stick with you, I don't think it'll survive, because you have to find a special person that'll actually be there come high or high water.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. Look, to each his own. I think, you know, humans, we're so different. All of us are so different from each other that what some people can do, other people can't, and what some people can't do, other people can. So it's all down to the nature of the relationship, the personalities involved, and their individual strengths and weaknesses. And there isn't a solid answer.
True, and every relationship needs a sex toy, Kevin, as well.
Right. Yeah, because if you're going to be away for a while, there's got to be something to keep your partner happy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Look, there's also reasons that people decide not to be in relationships, you know, and sometimes it has nothing to do with success. Maybe they just don't need the drama.
Yeah, no, I've actually got a friend like that as well. Like, she doesn't want to be in a relationship. She just travels all over the world, and that's what she does. And we've asked her many, even our mother has asked her, like, when are you getting married? When are you getting a boyfriend? And she doesn't need that at this time. If she feels like traveling to Bali next week, she wants to be able to get up and go instead of having to ask someone, can they go? Can they go with and having the whole complication of a relationship now?
Yeah, good for her. Mm.
Exactly. All right. Thanks again. Kevin, thanks.
Yeah. No, pleasure, man. Thanks for answering.
All right, no worries. You see, we don't mind interrupting the news with a little bit from Kevin.
I just love that we just gave advice.
Well, we're unqualified to give advice. That's why we love it. We love it.
That's why we give it with so much confidence.
With the advice desk, yeah.
Well, Kevin, I can tell you this.
Well, yeah. Kevin, what I know is...
Meanwhile, Sia goes home to himself. It's just like... The thing about relationships, it's about compromise, you know. It's
in
about
fact, that sacrifice. The only person who had any business giving Kevin advice is Ben.
True.
He's the only one in a stable, loving relationship.
But we all chipped in like we...
Oh, listen, you ask humans... You could ask the most... I love this about television shows. You like the news. They have people outside the courtroom and they're asking... The homeless guy who pees on the steps outside the court, they said to him, what do you think of this appeal by the applicant in this matter? And he goes, and they record him and they ask him for the news. And he's not afraid to give an opinion, even though he's peeing on the steps.
Can we now give like parenting advice? I feel like we're on the road.
All right. We've got to get into sport. Ben, what have you got for us?
All right. Yeah, Gareth, bad day for Novak Djokovic. Oh. So yesterday he lost in the second round of the Australian Open.
How did that happen?
Well, Dennis Istomin, right?
Who's that?
Exactly. Dennis Istomin. He's ranked 117th in the world. He's coached by his mother, and he's from Uzbekistan.
Oh, you'd have to be coached by your mother in Uzbekistan.
So Djokovic obviously rolled out there. Now, this is the six-time champion, right?
Yeah.
This guy is shit hot. He is like the Rod Laver Arena, basically. He goes out there, he wins.
Mm-hmm.
So he went out there, made a pretty decent start. But this Dennis, after the match, he said, I feel sorry for Novak Djokovic. Today, I was better than I thought I ever could be. Mm. He actually said, I was surprising myself with how good I was.
Yeah, well.
Djokovic had something like 72 unforced errors, okay? So that's sloppy.
Good
but
for
any,
him.
But still, you can think that with 72 unforced errors, you can still beat Dennis Istomin. But no, and he made no excuses. Djokovic, ever the, you know, the class act, he said, look, the guy was pretty good today. I was crap.
Did you watch it, Mavs?
No, I didn't watch the match, but I did see bits of the press conference that Ben's talking about now. Hmm.
But you must try and watch the press conference with this Dennis Istomin, and he's sitting there. He's like, geez, guys, like I was incredible today. There's no other way to describe it. So he'll no doubt lose the next match and then go back into, you know, normal life. But that is incredible. And what a turn of events for Andy Murray. Because now he's like, bring it on. My nemesis here. Andy, of course,
Andy's so excited.
He's been runner-up in this tournament five times, right? Five times he's basically missed the bouquet. And he's thinking, sweet, I got a clean run here. I just got to keep dotting my I's and crossing my T's and I'm in here. Yeah. So what this means is look out for Dimitrov and Raonic. These two guys, you know, these are the sort of guys who are now on that side of the draw who could do some wonders here. They might get into the final against Murray, and they might do so under the radar, and then suddenly Andy's in the big pressure. This is what Andy's now good experience in life. He is now the top dog, and everybody wants a piece of the top dog.
What do you think about Stan the Man's chances?
Well, he's quite old. You must never forget that. And although he is good, and he's proven himself, and people have really doubted him, there's some other young characters. Like I said, there's Dimitrov and Raonic. Look out for them. So Federer's still in. Nadal's still in. Kenny Shikori is still in, despite the fact he seems to be playing lots of five-setters. So that's still there. And in the women's draw, Agnieszka Radwanska, she's gone.
Mm. Yeah. Oh.
So she fell in straight sets. She got hammered, actually, 6-3, 6-2 by some woman with a very long name. Otherwise, everyone else is still in. So, right, on to AFCON.
Some woman with a long name.
AFCON, the group of death, was playing last night.
Who's that?
Well, that's Group A, Gareth.
Got to be careful what you say.
Sorry, Group B.
You have to be careful what you call a group of death in Africa. We just went through the failed states index and found out six of the top 10 countries are here.
Well, that's why you don't call it the death group. It's going to be group of death. So the group of death, that's group B. Algeria, Tunisia. Now, you would think on paper Algeria should beat these guys.
Yeah.
But the North African derby, well, Tunisians have had the upper hand. And last night, well, 2-1 again to Tunisia. So they win that one.
Good for them.
And then Senegal, tournament favorites, looking shit hot right now. They won 2-0 against Zimbabwe. And it could have been a lot more. Senegal got quite sloppy in front of goal towards the end. So tonight we've got Ivory Coast versus Democratic Republic of Congo. That's at 6 o'clock. And then Morocco take on Togo at 9. Saturday, if you're a big fan of Ghana, well, you're in luck. They play Mali at 6. And Egypt, Uganda is the game after that. And then Sunday, wrapping up the weekend, will be Cameroon versus host Gabon. And then Burkina Faso will take on Guinea-Bissau. So that will basically determine who will go through in Group A. And then after that, all the other groups will be decided. Even the pool of death, the death pool.
Well, I just want to come in with a thing about Gambia quickly, because we spoke about Gambia quite a lot this week.
Yes.
We even had a Gambian in here on Tuesday. Pajuf. Now, Ashley sent me this message just about this Gambian president. Apparently, he phoned the election winner on national TV to congratulate him and then backtracked and clung to power once it was suggested he would face charges for crimes during his long reign. We must be extra careful that we don't spook Zuma the same way with all those Jay-Z 784 things. It's way more important to get him out of power than to make him face charges.
Well, the new president was successfully, sworn into office yesterday. He took the oath.
Okay. That's good news.
Because, you know, there were concerns around whether or not that was going to happen because Yahya Jammeh still refuses to step down. But President Adama Barrow took the oath of office yesterday. So that
I suppose it also helps that Senegal could then just sort of come in and go, look, guys.
Yes.
pretty much got you surrounded here.
All right. Yeah.
Just like the game against the Barbie last night. Right, so English Premier League for this weekend. All the top teams are in action, so look at the big fixtures. Liverpool will take on Swansea. Now, Swansea are dreadful. They're Welsh, they're bottom of the log, and they've got no chance of winning this one. That'll be at 2:30 on Saturday. Stoke host Man United, also very small chance of winning that one. You'd think Man United, who are still looking pretty good, and there's been rumours that they might get Antoine Griezmann to the club.
Swansea are dreadful. I'm still stuck.
They are atrocious this year. They really are. Just no hopes. No hope whatsoever. Man United look for them to take that one. That's at 5 o'clock on Saturday. And then Man City versus Spurs. This is the big one for the weekend.
Yeah.
Spurs are looking to make it 7 in a row. And, they're the last team to beat Chelsea. They're looking very strong. They keep getting the points. They're high as they've ever been in the league, I guess. And they haven't won this title in over 50 years. But as Spurs people always say, this could be the year. Man City, on the other hand, well, Pep Guardiola, there's no bullshit with that guy. He basically said, look, we've got no chance of winning this league.
All right.
We've been a little bit Swansea over the last couple of weeks. So, we just, play for pride. And then Sunday, we've got Southampton versus Leicester at 2. Now, Leicester had a rocky season. They've lost some key players to AFCON as well. So, if you're a betting man, Southampton's a pretty good one there. Arsenal take on Burnley. That'll be at 4:15. And then Chelsea take on Hull at 6:30. So, there should be some one-sided matches throughout this. If you are betting, get a nice accumulator going there with the favourites looking pretty strong for the wins. Into crickets. Well, it's Behardeen time all weekend. Yes, he is the captain of the T20 side, and he'll be taking his captaincy on his home ground. So tonight, 6 o'clock, SA versus Sri Lanka in the first T20. It's a very experimental South African side. Lots of form players, though, which is quite nice. So the T20 league here in this country, all the sort of best players from the season they've been put in there. Behardeen himself is in sparkling form.
Okay.
And they'll take on a Sri Lankan team, which I think has about 6 players from the test side. They've got absolutely walloped 6 of the best trousers down by the Proteas.
Oh.
And then on Sunday, we'll get the T20 at the Wanderers. That'll be a daytime T20 at 2:30. And then that series will wrap up next Wednesday at Newlands. Other cricket on the go right now. Australia are taking on Pakistan. And the Aussies had a slight blip in the second match, but they won pretty handsomely in the third. They won that one by 7 wickets. So Sunday, we'll see them getting a chance to catch the series. It's a 5-match series. They're currently 2-1 up. So if they win at the SCG on Sunday, it'll be 3-1. And then India versus England. Well, I did say England were going to lose again. Well, they did. But they had India precariously plays at 25-3. Now, we all know India are pretty good, and they will be the favorites going into the Champions Trophy in June. But that top order
also, they control the ICC, don't they?
Well, it's the BCCI, which is trading as ICC. That's how the legal ramifications are. So India, 25-3. And then Yuvraj, who, I forgot this guy was still playing. Yuvraj and Dhoni got together. The two of them put on 256 runs. Yuvraj with 150, Dhoni with 134. India from 25 for 3 to 381 for 6. It's got to be shit being an English bowler. I mean, these guys. Anyway, England didn't just do so badly.
They just smack you around.
They do. They just get smacked around. It's like they're coming home to an abusive dad. Like, oh, here it comes. And they just get a beating. So England didn't do too badly in the end. Viles Morgan eventually got 100. And, well, they lost by 15 runs. So that one is done. 2-0, Indian lead. That's only a 3-match series. Sunday, if you do like watching English cricketers get beaten, you can watch more of that, Eden Gardens. And then finally in the golf, Abu Dhabi Championship, Henrik Stenson got to a flying start. He said he wasn't sure whether this game was going to be good or bad. He didn't put a lot of practice in over the offseason, but 8-under, that's pretty damn good. 64 for him, decent chasing pack, and that will be in a decent time zone as well for you this weekend if you're looking for some golf from sort of late morning onwards.
All right.
That's all your big sport for the Friday.
Thank you very much, Ben. That's a look at sport, and we'll have a look at money next because Anthea Gardner is standing by to give us the latest on what's going on in the stock markets and everything else. Oh, no, it's Henry standing in for Anthea, right? Yeah, yeah. Is he on Skype at the moment? I forgot that we've got Henry this morning. Hey, Henry, how are you? Let me see. Is he not there yet? Oh, God. All right, Lucas. I don't know what's going on here half the time. All right. Who knows? I'm just checking out hashtag invest. Most popular portfolio of our four. You want to guess? You think it's aggressive, conservative, growth, or growth and income?
I'm going to guess aggressive.
I'm going to guess growth.
Aggressive for the heck of it.
It is aggressive.
Yeah. Mm.
A lot of people like that because the risk is 75 to 99, which are the higher levels of risk. So obviously a lot of people who are not afraid of a bit of risk. And we'll check in with Anthea next week about how they're all performing, just so that we can have a touch on these things, you know, so let people know what's going on. But if you haven't got involved yet, lots and lots of people have, and they're enjoying themselves because you can see what happens. You know, all the stuff we talk about every morning with Anthea, you can actually have a result that impacts you positively and hopefully not, but negatively occasionally too. And it's just fun to see how all of this stuff works and to actually have a reason to care about the stock market, a reason to care about the economy and the currency and everything else. So it's useful to know these things. Is Henry on there? Lucas? Are you okay? Let me take a break here because I don't need to rush this. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll get Henry Biddlecombe in next. He's standing in for Anthea this morning when it comes to the money shot. All right. We're going to get Henry on in a moment or two. That was The Beebster with Will I am, right? And Power.
He's coming to SA quite soon, right?
Yes, he is.
Like how many days?
I don't know. I actually forgot he was coming, and then someone reminded me the other day because someone actually wanted tickets, and they thought I could help them.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So I said, no, I can't help you. I'm so sorry. Of course I don't have those kinds of powers. The last time Bieber was here, I went to meet him, remember? And I missed out. All right, let's get hold of Henry.
Or did you?
No, I did. I missed out on meeting him. Well, yeah, I see what you mean, Ben. Hey, Henry, how are you?
How are you, Gareth? Fine, and you?
Good, man. I'm glad we eventually got hold of you. Seems like we've got some system problems on this side. So, it's Friday morning. The last thing we want to worry about is stocks that are not going up. So tell us about the ones that did.
Okay, well, Gareth, you know, yesterday was a pretty quiet day on the markets. I mean, it was essentially flat.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a hell of a lot of news to report on. But what was interesting was the Bureau of Economic Research came out with their Consumer Confidence Index for December.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's important to understand exactly what that is. So basically, it's a survey of 2,500 households across the country. And really, what it is it's a measure of how many people feel positive or negative about the economy, and it gauges their propensity to spend over the next quarter.
All right.
So, next quarter,
so would that include Christmas or not?
No. So it would be January, February, March.
Okay, that's interesting. All right, okay. So how did it come out?
Well, look, to put it into context, I mean, we sort of reached record lows in the mid-80s with a reading of negative 33 and record highs in 2007 before the crash of 23. So December's reading came in at negative 10, versus a negative versus a forecast of negative 13. So it was slightly better than expected, but you know it's still a negative reading. And Gareth, really, what it means is that the South African consumer is feeling the pinch. Obviously, we've had seriously high inflation over the last 12 months, and that's been a function of the weak rand and very high food inflation. But you know, it's not really news to us. I mean, we've seen it reflect in the trading statements from the retailers that are sensitive to consumer sensitive. You know, we've seen it in the trading updates from Truworths, from Fushini's, Mr. Price, Woolworths. Yeah. And the way you look at it is you have a look at their sales growth, which has sort of been slightly positive and in some cases negative. And then you subtract from that the inflation. So in other words, how much of Woolworths or Mr. Price's clothing prices gone up? And that tells you, in terms of volume, how much more or how much less the South African consumer is buying. And I can tell you that having a look at my screen now, volume growth is anywhere from between negative 6 to negative 18% at any one of those retailers.
Which is not a great sign. So I mean, if you were in retail right now, you'd probably be a bit nervous.
You would, but the counter argument to that is, you know, if you have a look at the share prices of these retailers, they've come off over the last while.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we always look at a stock's PE to decide whether or not it's cheap or expensive.
Right.
And the PEs are quite low. So one could argue that the bad news has been priced into these shares. And if you look at a stock like Woolworths, for example, it recently bottomed out at around 65 Rand and it's now sitting at 72 Rand. We were buyers of Woolworths at 65 Rand. So we think the bad news has actually been priced into the shares. And we feel we might have hit a little bit of a trough at this point. So we think it's probably an opportunity to start accumulating. And I'll tell you why. We do think that inflation is going to start abating in the second half of this year.
Okay.
And that has everything to do with hopefully a stable rand. And of course, that's not up to us. That's up to our friends in government. And also to do with sort of slowing food price inflation where, you know all about the drought by now and the maize shortage.
Right.
And that should start to abate in the second half. And hopefully food inflation will start to come down and people will have a little bit more disposable income.
Well, that would be great. And it sounds to me like the general prognosis is a lot healthier than it was at the beginning of 2016. When we just come through Nenegate and people were all losing their minds. So far, so good. Can we look at some individual things? I noticed that Ascendis had a little dip this week.
Yes, so I mean, that's one that we're actually looking at the moment, Gareth. And you know, it's not just a pharma company, but they also have a portfolio of cosmetic products as well.
Yeah, they've also seen, we've seen huge growth in that business, and we've seen an increase in their share price as well. Very nice increase in their share price over the last year.
Yes, we have. We've actually got a meeting with management in the next sort of 2 weeks. We're just waiting for them to come back to us with a date.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we should have a good story to share with you, after that meeting.
All right. Well, we'll keep our ears to the ground until you've told us all of that. What else do you have to tell us this morning?
Well, you know, there was a production update from South 32, and you know, they're one of the listed diversified commodity producers on the JSE.
Mm-hmm.
And without getting into the really boring specifics, it was a tough production half for them. That business is trading on a PE of 6.5, and they're benefiting from higher commodity prices. And I think that is a theme that we can see across all of the diversified commodity producers, where should commodity prices remain at these levels, these diversified commodity producers are looking cheap. And although they had one hell of a run last year, as you know, there's nothing to stop them from running another 30 to 50% this year. So we certainly wouldn't advocate being underweight the resources, the commodity producers, at least this year. But again, that really depends on A, the narrative coming out of the USA, which until now has been quite bullish. And B, you know, the data coming out of China. I mean, they released their GDP growth number yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And it was slightly ahead of consensus, although it is slowing. You know, the economy is growing at 6.8%.
Right.
Per annum at this stage. And, you know, it also depends on the condition of the Chinese housing market. But the point is, you know, should commodity prices stay where they are, and there are a number of things that can impact them over the next 12 months, you're going to see good returns out of that sector.
All right, very good. Is there anything else you want to throw in, Henry, or is that the gist?
Well, look, I think the other noteworthy news item from yesterday was just the ECB's interest rate decision. So essentially, they've decided to keep the main interest rate flat at zero. So basically, it's a continuation of interest rate divergence between the USA and Europe. What does that mean for South Africa? Well, it's probably a moderate positive because, you know, as you know, Europe is a bigger trading partner for South Africa than America. Mm-hmm. And a weaker euro means a stronger rand, obviously. And because we're a net importer of products, that's ultimately a good thing. It also relieves a little bit of pressure on inflation in the country, and it puts less pressure on our balance of payments.
Right. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for talking to us this morning. That's Henry Biddlecombe. He's standing in for Anthea Gardner this morning. And that was the money shot. It is just after 7 o'clock. We ran a little bit late because we couldn't get hold of Henry, but it is all on track now. And we're here to look after you this morning, keep you company, and to fill you in on all the important stuff that's going on. Mubs has got some news for you and everything else on the way between now and nine. Our guest this morning is an amazing inventor. This guy invented the Barracuda, Mubs. You know what that is? It's that pool cleaning device, which was a uniquely South African invention. It's being used all over the world. And he's just invented a sex device, a cock ring, which I think we need to talk about. I think people would be fascinated.
I think that qualifies under sex toy. It's a sex toy.
I think so. Yeah.
Does he own like the patent to the Barracuda?
Yes. I think he may have sold it. I don't know. We'll find out from him. But he'll pop in later on. His name is Carl Supra. He's going to be our guest this morning. So that's all coming up a little bit later on. Is there anything else that you would like that you haven't already got? Because I can make that happen. Anybody?
Ah, wow.
You want something, Sia?
Well, now the door's just open. Goodness,
right.
Where do I
begin? It's all coming up in the next couple of minutes. Little Kid Cudi and the Frequency get you in the mood for Friday. It's the weekend, baby.
CliffCentral.com.